This is an Alliance podcast.
No unity, no power.
White power for white people. Black power for black people. 1967. The Black Panther Party. The movement.
Freedom.
This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
I guess what's up, world?
Hey, what's up?
It's been a week.
Yeah, it's been a long week, but it's all good. We gonna talk about it, cause y'all ain't gonna fuck up my week, and then whatever.
Yeah, we gonna do our best. We'll do our best. But let's get into it.
Wait, pause.
Yeah.
I'm Sky from Southwest Atlanta. Yes, I'm born and raised there. Now I'm in the Southern California beach. Wayfair. Aha!
You did it.
And I'm with who?
What's up, world? It's your girl, Sylves, VA all day, to up, to down, living that PNW life down to sipping the coffee, because what is sleep when the world is imploding around women's soccer? So, yeah.
And we are Shea Butter FC, a podcast featuring two black women's perspectives on soccer, football, everything in between.
Delivering content with soul and seasoning that'll moisturize your skin,
lay your edges,
and deepen your love for all things black women.
So what are we talking about this week?
I mean, nothing else to talk about. Weren't any games, so at least not in this league. This week is dedicated to talking about everything that's gone down in the past 72 hours or so.
Yep.
Yeah, in the NWSL. And then what are we gonna do at the end here?
Yeah, white supremacy came through and said, doo doo doo
doo.
And then we're going to call out, we're going to close out all out. We're going to close out on a positive note and bring you our hits and riffs and raves of the week, because there ain't going to be no rants, because we about to rant.
The whole episode is a rant.
Whole fucking rant. So doo 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 doo. Let's go.
Yes, indeed. So I guess the best place to start is giving people information just in case they haven't heard. Though it's been everywhere the past couple of days. I fully expect my parents to call me soon. So this week, for those of you that do not know, Thursday morning, Meg Linehan of The Athletic dropped a bombshell of an article about former North Carolina Courage coach Paul Riley. In interviewing two former players that had accused him of sexual harassment, assault, abuse, coercion, and a myriad of other really terrible things while he was the coach of the Portland Thorns through the end of 2015. The name of those players are Sinead Farrelly, and Shem, Anna Shem, and so that article hit Thursday morning in The Athletic and had a huge ripple effect. We also want to make sure we continue to shout out previously, I believe last month or August now, the Washington Post released an expose as well on the Washington Spirit, detailing the abuses that had happened via former coach Richie Burke, with Kaya McCullough putting her name on that article, as well as other players sharing their stories anonymously. So the fallout from the Meg Linehan article specifically, because again, this happened on Thursday, the NWSL Players Association issued essentially ultimatums to the league. On that Thursday, there were going to be press conferences because there were supposed to be games this Friday and Saturday. All of those press conferences were canceled. Games were suspended for the week at the request of the players, most likely, is what we've been told. By Friday, they wanted Paul Riley fired, and he was. They wanted Lisa Baird to resign as commissioner, and she resigned. Additionally, on Friday, between Friday and Saturday, timeline gets very fuzzy, U.S. Soccer and FIFA have offered to step in and investigate some of what's going on in WSL, particularly in light of the Paul Riley allegations. And then today, and we are recording this on a Sunday evening, as of today, a committee was formed by the NWSL leadership that includes Amanda Duffy, who I believe is acting president of the Orlando Pride, but is the former acting president, but not commissioner, but transition person for between commissioners for the NWSL from 2016 until Lisa Baird began her term as commissioner in 2019. Sophie Savage, who is a member of the OL group, which is Olympic Lyonnaise, which owns OL Reign, and then Angie Long, who is a member of the Kansas City NWSL ownership, and they retain the counsel of attorney Amanda Kramer. USSF, US Soccer Federation, has retained the outside counsel of Sally Yates, which many of you might know as one of the first people let go under the Trump administration, is a prosecutor in the United States of America. So she is the outside counsel retained by US Soccer to investigate the NWSL. And before we get into our thoughts about all of this, I don't think that summary does it justice, but you can look all of this up. Like I said, it's everywhere. We want to make sure that we acknowledge that we stand in support with all NWSL players, past, present, and future. And we stand with and believe Sinead Fairley, Manisham, and Kaya McCullough, who were brave enough to put their names to these stories that ultimately are a landmark moment in the league, and hopefully for the better. So how you feeling, Sky? I just said all of that.
We said this crap was gonna happen.
Yes, we did.
There was no shock. This is no new. This was it just blew up, huh?
Yeah. We've called this The Reckoning. Mm-hmm. It's the name of the episode, and that's exactly what this is.
Go ahead, go on.
This is a reckoning, right? So I mean, we've touched on a lot of things over the very short history of our podcast. This is our 23rd episode. This is very daunting. I feel like we've touched on a lot of these issues pretty much every episode, right? We've opened the library. We've done it in our rants. We've done it on crossover episodes and other episodes we've done with our fellow soccer fans, particularly Black soccer fans and podcasters. So this is the reckoning. And I would say this, in a league in which players have no power or say over their bodies, meaning there's no free agency and no way to choose their teams, a league like that cannot succeed and it cannot be sustained.
Well,
and this league is a microcosm of a larger society and many institutions within that society, both in the United States and globally. And ultimately, this is what it looks like when capitalism rules everything. Mm-hmm. And it uses patriarchy and racism in particular as a tool to maintain said capitalism, right?
Ooh.
So that has manifested itself this week in so many, many ways, both very, very loudly, very, very nuanced. There's a lot that's being said. There's a lot that's not being said. There are very hard truths, very, very easy solutions in terms of don't hire predators, right? Have better screening, have better background checks. But this is also a cultural issue. And just what we don't talk about and what we've talked around. And by we, I'm using, universally, I can't remember the fancy word for it, but I'm including myself in that, but I'm not, because it's very different when you're Black. And I know I've said this before, either on Twitter or in a podcast, but soccer in this country, particularly women's soccer in this country, tends to talk around matters of race and not about them. And I think that all intersects with what we're looking at and what we're not seeing and not hearing and who we're not hearing from. And we'll get into that. I will jump back into that and circle back around to that. And forgive me, I'm not going to be as eloquent this podcast as hopefully I am other times. This shit is jarring and it's triggering. And as a survivor, it's hard. And I think many people who watch the sport are survivors. And there's a lot there, right? And I'm trying very, very hard not to project. This should be the players leading all of these conversations. Fans are invested, staff are invested, journalists are invested, but ultimately it's about the players. And I'm trying to make sure we keep them centered and let them lead and don't put words in their mouth or thoughts and actions on them that they did not do. Having said that, when I speak of players and community and support, this is also about, like I said, capitalism. This is about unions.
Mm-hmm.
Support your local union, by the way. Vote union. I come from a union family. My parents were in the teachers union. My uncle's a Teamster. My grandfather was in the, like, we're a union family. You better vote union. You better back your union. You don't break the picket line. Like, there is more strength communally than there is individually. That is the point of a union. We put our powers together because we don't have it individually. So to me, this is also about unions. This is about two unions in particular, right? NWSLPA and the United States Women's National Team, PA, joining forces because
PA, Players Association.
Yes, Players Association, I apologize. And almost every sports league has a PA, right? You have the National Football League, PA, which is very famous. So it's not uncommon to have these things. Players have to have a collective voice. And at the end of the day, regardless, they share a league. This is about players and players who don't have power regardless of status. Just because we know their names does not mean they have power. And these are players trying to protect each other, and they have been trying to protect each other in a system that has no desire to protect them. In my opinion, while there are levels of hierarchy within a system, no one is free.
Nope.
No one has power.
Not at all.
And currently, right now, today is the most power these players have ever had. And circling back to that announcement about the committee that the NWSL power structure has put forward, it clearly still doesn't matter. The players had no say.
Mm-hmm.
I know Mitch Purse said this isn't good enough when the NWSL tweeted that out. Part of that might be because, full disclosure, Amanda Duffy, like I said, was previously in power to help the league transition, meaning she was on the clock. When some of these coaches were hired or rehired,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you either have a situation where this woman knew and therefore should not be doing this job right now, or she didn't know. And if she didn't know, I fear she is grossly incompetent and unqualified for this job. And so she shouldn't be in this job. Either way, mm-hmm. Amanda Duffy should not be on this committee. And we'll touch on this in a little bit. That committee is also very white, very cisgendered.
We're gonna touch on that.
But ultimately, this is about unions and players trying to grab power, trying to bargain their worth. Think about that.
Well, okay, so.
But yeah, I'll let you. I know you have something to say about
it. Yeah, yeah. So, because I mean, I saw this argument and I knew it was coming. I first saw it. Because U.S. soccer. So understand something. All this shit comes back to U.S. soccer. Because I don't want people thinking NWSL exists out of the periphery of the U.S. soccer. It's all the U.S. soccer. Like, I was annoyed when they were like, we're doing an investigation, so you're going to investigate yourself? Like, that's what we're doing? The U.S. Soccer Federation, they are the orchestrators of this fuck shit. So they developed the NWSL after the WPS. What was it before that? After
UWSL, I believe.
UWSL, then it fell apart. Okay, yes, WPS, then it was UWSL, then it fell apart. Then you had NWSL. Because the goal was to keep the players on the U.S. Women's National Team here locally in the state.
Yeah.
So you could help them develop other talent too, and be a place. And so you'd have this wonderful vision of a league. Mind you, U.S. soccer never gave a damn about women and didn't see any humanity in women. So this was all for show, kind of, sort of. But in a hierarchy of power, you would think that the U.S. Women's National Team actually has some kind of pull or power. But we got to keep in mind, because if you haven't been paying attention to soccer since this all has unfolded, you never realize that the U.S. Women's National Team, and if you didn't watch the movie, the documentary LFG, let's fucking go, you might not have understood some things that happened previously. But what people will have failed to realize is that they never had power even on a national team. They were always at war with the federation, and like at any moment they could get fired. And so when they got their first CBA and their first collective bargaining agreement, which I use that loosely because that was really just coercion into getting a freaking contract. That was like, they didn't really have a choice. They had like, you either take this to kind of guarantee you get paid or you don't, and you don't have nothing, right? And so they took that contract and have a version of CBA. in the process, they then were trying to get a new coach. That didn't work out. And as a fan, you can see a lot of things happen in the realm of retaliation, but they had nobody to go back to and even get that handled. In the same vein of all this, Alex Morgan, if you read the article, you know, went forth with Sanid and Mana to like report these things in the height of her power, perceived power and fame. Right. And like nothing happened to get Paul Riley out the paint. So there's really no power. So I say all this to say, when the U.S. women's soccer team, in these different interviews and documentaries are saying they were hella scared doing the lawsuit, it was real. Because U.S. soccer could fire them. And the U.S. soccer is in charge of the NWSL. And so everybody's living in this mad, overarching system of fear. Because anything you do and say that goes against the power can blow up in your face and you can be barred from playing. Not only just here, but all over the place.
Yeah, right. Well, so it's not a big world, right? There are many leagues, there are many players, but the nature of the sport and its fans don't make it a huge landscape. You see the same people
all
online, like you have this, you're having similar conversations. And so there's not even 6 degrees of separation in this space for those who are not within the world. I imagine you are if you're listening to this podcast. And I will hearken to this, and it's not my own story. It is my parents, particularly my mother. My parents are ministers. My mother works in specialized ministry, and one of those specialized ministries is dealing with helping churches through clergy sexual misconduct, which often includes assault, coercion, child sexual abuse, all of this stuff. So think Catholic Church scandal, but all churches do it, right? And what that has taught me watching that, you know, sort of as the child of somebody who does that work, is like, this is going to take a while, and you have to get everything out. You have to expose everything. Lies grow in the dark, right? Like it's the darkness, it's the fear, it's the not speaking that is what grips people. It's the fear. And that's what's happening right now, right? It's with these coaches that have been abusive. It was kind of like the way the Catholic Church moved priests from one parish to the other when they were caught. You moved coaches from one team to another when they were caught.
Yeah, and not just stateside, they were doing this worldwide.
Yeah, right. So we should make a caveat, and this is not in any way to single out one nation, one conglomerate of countries, or anything like that. But the majority of the coaches who have been implicated in the NWSL are not American-born coaches, or not United States-born coaches. I think you have, Scotland and England I don't know, it's Ben Stevie from France, or he's from France, right?
Yeah.
This is a global issue. It's not just the United States issue,
right.
To say nothing of the fact that they were able to prosper as predators.
Right. And so it's also important to understand, because like in all these articles, while you've had people come forth and put their name, you have like about 20, 30 women or entity, whoever,
right?
Anybody who've kept themselves anonymous, who are either still playing in the game, a part of the game, coaching, either in the NWSL or worldwide, that are legitimately scared of the retribution that will happen if it comes to light that you said something.
Yes, right. Even now. And I think that, again, speaks to culture, right? And I think in the midst of something like this that is incredibly hard and heartbreaking and triggering, like this hurt. It hurt. I couldn't watch soccer this weekend. It hurt to hear this, even though we knew it was coming. I think in the midst of that, people try to come up with all sorts of solutions and all sorts of answers. And again, your stuff is mixed in with what's going on in this process. And so, I mean, I get that. And I'm trying to practice grace, both with others and myself, as we do this. But the reason I think we brought up it being the union issue, speaking to control of self, right? Control of body. Part of that is negotiating a CBA, which the Players Association hasn't had. And included in that should be free agency. So players do have a say in where they go, where they spend their lives, how their livelihood works, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I think that's it. I don't know. I think my next thought is going to be interesting. I'm still trying to figure out how to word it. I did type it out. So the elephant in the room. So Lisa Baird, and I think it's Baird. I didn't check to pay
attention. Lisa B? Just call Lisa B.
Yeah, and I'm not really concerned about it right now. I'm sorry. I should care more about how to say people's names regardless. But Lisa Baird was absolutely sacrificed for the whims, follies, and dangerous behaviors of men, particularly white men, right? Because it's white men in leadership.
Yes.
Also, Lisa Baird was absolutely an accomplice in the whims, follies, and dangerous behaviors of men, and willingly so. And I say that to say, one, I don't feel particularly bad for Lisa Baird, though I acknowledge that women have taken the fall thus far.
Yes, they have.
What I will say this highlights to me is we got to deal with the whiteness of this league.
Yes, we do.
So when I said you all talk around race and not about race, this is what I mean. And again, I am prefacing this by saying I'm talking about whiteness and not solely white people, right? You don't have to be white to perpetuate white supremacy.
Yep.
So this is in no way blaming Sinead or Manna or Jenna Hellstrom, who I know came out and said, she was one of the anonymous sources for the Washington Post article. This is in no way diminishing their story or their bravery in speaking up. But when we talk about white supremacy, we talk about it because it hurts white people too.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this in terms of how you build a system and how whiteness protects itself has a lot to do with the dynamics of men and women within whiteness. This system can exist because powerful men are able to perpetuate things in part because women who are perceived to have power enable them to do so. Mm-hmm. And if we want to get down to the crux of it, who's raising these men, who's giving birth to these men, who's married to these men, who are the sisters and the aunts of these men? It's not Black and brown women. Mm-hmm. And that's throughout the history of this country, right? White women are not only complicit, they are purveyors of white supremacy. And I say that to say, as all of this news comes out this weekend, right, I'm thinking about whose voices we're not hearing, whose faces we're not seeing. And there's no way you can tell me Black and brown players don't have stories.
Well, come on now.
And part of, too, I guess why I want to touch on the whiteness of it all is because it affects how you're going to fix this structure, right? I know last year, 2020, summer of 2020, and this is countrywide, again, soccer is a microcosm for society. You know, there was all of this performative politic, right? Around, oh God, we've watched this Black man be murdered on TV by the state. We've got to do something as white people. Here are the books, educate yourself. Go to these lectures, watch this TED talk, do this, talk to these people, yada, yada, yada. And by the summer of 2021, it didn't mean shit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the truth of the matter is, if you were doing the work, if you read the books, you would have alternate structures to be able to put in place. Well, because anti-racism gives you those.
Yep.
Right? The core of what you believe, right? The politic of it all, how to be actively anti-racist, has already been laid bare in front of you. And the fact that people are scrambling to try to fix the system by doing the exact same thing they've been doing lets me know the work wasn't done.
Yep. It was all for decoration. You know that shit was on the shelf. You know, right. It was there in the library, like, look at my
And it's just, and it's also about who's, again, who's missing from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The first collective is of Black players. I've heard nothing from them. I've heard no one ask them.
Right.
They have great speakers, eloquent speakers, people who can get points across. They have demands and needs. They are scared too.
Yep.
And nothing's been asked of them. Nothing's been said to them. And I know you're going to talk about this, but like, again, acknowledging completely the bravery of Sinead and Manna and Jenna, why wasn't Kaya's story enough to start?
Okay, so yeah. So wait, before you go into
sorry.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, my irritation. So yes, I appreciate their bravery. However, I was red hot pissed that we didn't have movement of like this magnitude when Kaya's story dropped. Who she's a Black woman. And yeah. Then I think it was the week later that week that Chrissy Holly get fired. In that article referencing his firing, it directly tell for cause why he got fired, because he probably signed NDAs, but it lets you know there was some racism. I'm like, racism in Louisville, Kentucky, the city that already has an issue because we have not tried people who killed Breonna Taylor.
We talk about
that city where you only got so many Black players on the team. Are you fucking serious? Four, depending on how one may identify. But it's like, you only got so many people on the team. What the fuck? How are people not mad? And so, I've been mad about the whitewashedness of the stories, because for sure, if white people are going through it, you can see the racism running through stuff. All the marginalized people are going through it too. Because, I mean, as people have pointed out in the story with Mana and Sinead, they talked about the homophobia.
That too, yeah.
Like, as a Black LGBT woman, I'm like, well, goddamn, that explains a lot of things. But it's like the shit you see running through the league, like, it's the stories you don't hear. And so, like, you're not hearing the Black and brown, Indigenous, the Asian voices. You're not hearing the people who are differently abled. You're not hearing any other marginalization. I mean, in the case of Chrissy Holly, isn't he indicted on federal charges for
human trafficking? Falsifying visas or something like that. Or being a part of a scam.
So the immigrant community, all the shit that's happening in this crazy ass ecosystem, it's not been put on blast and in the fourth street. Yeah, I was pissed off that, we didn't have this shake the table kind of moment about a month ago.
Yeah.
As you said,
I think it permeates too, in that your solutions are still really white. Like, I keep going back to this committee, you're replacing a white woman who failed other white women, by the way,
right,
with more white women, one of whom likely failed white women. And that's not to mention the council, Amanda Kramer, who has failed twice to not prosecute Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein's case. So none of these people, women, right? And please understand, capitalism uses the tools of patriarchy and racism to sustain itself. And you mentioned the homophobia. I'm really glad you did, because I think that's been another thing that's really, really been pervasive that we haven't talked about in this league. And I know Claire and some others brought it up in reading the article. And we talk about this, right, when players are able to, force themselves to move, and who the league accommodates and who the league doesn't. And it's very glaringly obvious, even for players we like. Straight players tend to be accommodated in leagues.
Woo! Come on now!
Players are accommodated. And I'm bringing up homophobia because even when attached to whiteness and white womanhood, it automatically others you, right? It takes away your femininity. Mm-hmm. The default for woman in this country is white.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you can't talk about gender discrimination. You can't talk about patriarchy and sexism without talking about racism. Beloveds, gender is racialized, and race is gendered.
Yep.
Oh, they're not separate.
Okay, now.
Right? Mm-hmm. My womanness reads very differently because I'm Black.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As opposed to white women, but it also reads differently because I'm light. I present straight. Right. I'm Christian. I'm educated. Mm-hmm. I'm vaguely middle class, depending on the time in my childhood you want to talk about. And I have access and all of these other things. Womp. Sorry. We've gotta talk about it in totality. I think I saw a couple people we can't talk about the racism right now. I'm like, the racism's not separate. Excuse?
What? Say what?
We've seen all sorts of takes on Twitter this weekend. Because it's Twitter. It's messy, which is Deeza says it's why it's free. But you can't separate isms. Like, that doesn't work, right? And when we talk about intersectionality, that's what we mean.
Yes.
Even though, again, intersectionality is a term used specifically for Black women in the prison system by Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, That's a whole different conversation for a different day, and how y'all just taking that term and fuck it all up. speaking of taking Black women's words and changing them. But yeah, I just think it's really interesting that with everything going on, that's still not something that people seem to be aware of or want to address. And quite frankly, as somebody who's had to deal with white womanness in the workplace in not a great way, that's triggering for me too, watching this play out.
Mm-hmm.
And watching this league play out all season. And yeah, I think in a attempt to have whiteness protect itself, nothing's changing.
Yes.
And the people who need to be at the table and need to have voices are going to be heard. And I would like to state too, the petition to have a former player be the commissioner, and don't get me wrong, there are some great former players who would make excellent commissioners, but I need y'all to understand, even in that, you've already eliminated most Black and brown possibilities because we've never been in the league. I literally sat there and was like, okay, let me go through a list. I was like, who played in the league? Like, short list of Black players who are not currently playing that have played in the league. Mm-hmm. And I mean, here or abroad, mm-hmm. there's maybe 3 or 4, and most of them didn't play in the NWSL, they played in the WPS.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they don't even have this iteration because there's the gap between the older Black players who blazed the trail and the players that are playing now. And that's why young Black and brown kids go so damn hard for Black players.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't had anybody else to look up to. But even in suggesting that, you've eliminated diversity.
Yep.
Like, you got to think about those things. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, it doesn't mean people aren't qualified, but we keep saying stop hiring men, stop hiring white men in particular. This moves in silence. I'm not particularly trusting white women either right now.
Right. And so also we need to define what the hell does a commissioner do? Because
yes,
if you can't do commissioner, you don't have to be a player. You might not have even dipped your toe in soccer. You need to be a quality leader. So you need to be able to see and make pivots and moves and changes to get everything back on track. You need to be anti-racist, anti-LGBT-phobia-ish, anti-transphobia-ish, anti-biased-ish, period. Anti-elitist, anti-ableist, all that. You need to be anti-problematic so that you are all inclusive. And more importantly, you are about a collaborative mindset, because that's the part when you don't have your anti-racism education, you don't recognize in order to make change, you got to be collaborative in your efforts and reach out to people in groups you don't know about and give them seats at the tables. And so you're going to have to leverage that. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to be a soccer player to be in a commissioner role. You need to be a really good leader who listens, but who can also collaborate. More importantly, well, I was going to say, you need to have a short-term, long-term strategy for where this league is going to go. How you going to go through and have these investigations? How are you going to go through and get the voices of players heard? How you're going to make a legitimate CBA? How you going to get owners together and vet them? And if you need to get owners about the paint who have the vibes of Delroy Henson, you get their asses about the paint. There's no none of this. I get strong-armed by some owner, like a Mayor Paulson. You don't get strong-armed by them they've been out here in the streets. And they've done, and they put investment in the team and my team, blah, blah, blah. Fuck that. If they are a threat to your establishment and have allowed for egregious behavior, you need to get their asses about the paint. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think that this is the reckoning. I think that's part of that. I think that when we say you need to bring everything to the light in order to heal mm-hmm. and to build a better league, that's part of it. You're going to lose people who have been successful. You're going to lose people who put money into this league. You're going to lose people that people find likable.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'm an OL Reign fan. My GM had to sit there and take it.
Yep.
And nobody owes him forgiveness for hiring Fariba Steedy. I don't care if there's a zero tolerance policy. A zero tolerance policy still is predicated on they have to fuck up for you to get rid of them. Somebody mm-hmm. was always going to get hurt at the expense of you carrying out that policy.
Yes.
And that's on you. That's harmful. Now, do I think my club does more right than wrong? Yes. But this is enough to get somebody out of the paint if people want them gone. Like, yep. I don't have it in me to protect anybody who's helped perpetuate the system. Mm-hmm. No matter their intentions. It's about impact right now.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about intent. People have been hurt, right? Like, I sat on that presser, which everybody on earth was at on Friday because it was the only one happening. But like, full disclosure, Jess Fishlock and Lou Barnes both had really eloquent things to say, particularly Jess Fishlock. But like, you could hear it in Lou Barnes' verse. She was distraught. Like, she was not okay, right? And as a leader in the league, and I imagine this is true of a lot of the, you know, the older players or the, you know, veteran players, that level of just distraught, and even what they did know, right, and they couldn't do anything about it, there's a level of guilt there, right? There's a level of guilt for everybody, for fans who liked people who have turned out to be abusive. There are people who like Chrissy Hollie, there are people who like Paul Riley, like, and you're not to blame, by the way. I saw somebody tweet that out, like, that's what abusers do, by the way.
Yeah,
they don't just abuse people, but they manipulate people they don't abuse,
right?
You're not supposed to know. So don't take that, is what I would say to people who are genuinely distraught about that. Don't take that. That's not on you. That's on the abuser. But yeah, I just think it's a clean house situation. And the truth of the matter is, nothing's going to change if you're not moving from an anti-racist lens.
Yep.
And so, that's that.
So you're saying, are you going to say a little point about you got to hire people that actually like women?
Yeah. Part of it is very simple, right? You need to set up a vetting process. Like, I need people who like women, and all women, not just cis women, and non-binary people as well, because we have plenty of players who are not women in this league. Like, hire people that don't hate those people. Hire people that don't hate Black and Brown people. Like, this is a very, and again, if you're moving from an anti-racist lens, the vetting process and the questions that you ask, will speak to that. You'll know because you're asking the questions. But again, because your league looks very much one way, you don't know to ask those questions.
Oh, okay. So that's important, because you also, like I said, we have yet to hear from the Black Women's Players Collective. In this new iteration of the WSL, for it to not to be the National White Soccer League, as you quoted, to be the actual National For Everybody League, Soccer League, the Black Women's Players Collective actually needs to have legitimate power and say, and have connections. They need to actually have a representative on the NWSL Players Association. And then you also need the variations for every ethnic group that exists within your league. You need an Asian, Pacific Islander one. You need a Native American one. You need a Latin Hispanic identifying one. You need one for people who are differently able, who have disabilities, for you to see that you don't see. Plenty of people have them. You need it for the LGBT community. Even if you can sit here and say, well, it's a lot of LGBT. You need these different groups, usually called infinity groups, player resource groups. I guess it would, because they're important. You need these groups of support and advocacy, so that they have a place and they can give you perspective that you don't know, particularly in this hyperly white league. And they need to be representative in your vetting process and your steps of you making an actual legitimate accountable evaluation type thing, and your quest to have an HR and DEI up in your league. You need these people to actually exist and have presence at the table. Additionally, let's see. On top of that, y'all need to read them anti-racism books and shit.
I mean, they might be doorstops right now, so I don't know.
Well, they need to pick them up. They need to actually pick them up and look. But more importantly, they need a CBA desperately. Because, like, as you noted, since you didn't pick up this point, even your favorite stars who have maneuvered their way through this system, they need a CBA too. Again, because everybody's in this ecosystem of fuckery that is U.S. soccer. And so you need a CBA to stop this foolishness. Any Aluko actually dropped out like some really good points in terms of what needs to be included in the CBA at bare minimum for players to get rights.
Yes.
And why in the world you haven't pulled somebody from Angel City to be on this committee is crazy. Well, but whatever.
And I think that's interesting only in the sense, right? I think in Meg's tweet, she was like, there's definitely politics at play. The issue with not pulling somebody from Angel City is, as of right now, that's your best bet to have a non-white person on committees. And because they're not involved, that's not an option. And so I'm asking myself, in a 10-team league, with some of those teams being in quote unquote ultra progressive cities, particularly out here in the Northwest, why is that? Why is Angel City the thing that changes any kind of diversity? It's clearly not enough.
Oh, you going here. Okay.
But are you kidding me right now? In 2021, after the summer of 2020, the 10 teams that exist are so white, you cannot diversify a committee that is going to sit and try to fix a league.
Wait. Michelle Kang.
I mean, that was the person I nominated for commissioner. When it's dropped, I was like, the reason I said it, and you can get her a director of player personnel, but you need somebody, one, who cares about the players first. And by all accounts, the spirit players are like, she is about the players. And hear me, this is also a slippery slope. Michelle Kang is an ardent she's a venture capitalist, right? Like, she is about capitalism, right? She and I aren't going to agree on everything, but she knows how to run, maintain, and grow a business.
Yep. And that's what your commissioner needs to do.
And she can do it while putting the players first. And she is an immigrant, and she is of East Asian descent, and she understands what it is to have to endure racism and sexism in a hyper-masculine, white, cisgendered world. And she was successful anyway. And so right now, it's not about whether. I agree. And you put people around her to check her. But you need someone like that, because even the names I've seen have been hyper-white.
Yep.
That I've seen a lot of people nominate. I've even seen people nominate white men.
Right.
I'm like, read the room.
Read the room, boo. Don't do that.
They can be the nicest white man in the world. It doesn't matter right now.
Right.
This don't concern you. I'm serious. Your job is to be an ally and to call out other men. That is it.
Yep.
Stay out of it.
Yeah.
And the ones who are doing their due diligence have said as much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen that. And like, shout out to the other PAs, particularly those in men's sports that have, you know, thrown their support behind the NWSL PA and what's going on. Shockingly, I don't shout out US soccer, but like, getting Sally Yates is a big deal.
Yes.
Because she gonna find some stuff, and it's not gonna look good for US soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, as Sky alluded to, this league is intrinsically tied to the Federation. There's no separation.
None at all.
So when they say they're investigating, they mean themselves.
Yeah.
Particularly in the midst of a lawsuit, that's not a good look for them.
Right. I mean, because I'm like, are y'all investigating to try to collect y'all, to try to give yourself some clearance time before you get got?
And again, and speaking back to whiteness and speaking back to former players, y'all that satisfied with what Sidney Parlow Cohn is doing to put
a former player
as a commissioner?
Come on now.
Y'all giving her an A plus grade right now.
Come on now. She was a former player and coach in this league.
So, like, I don't know if that's the answer, right? And again, I think there are people who are former players who are absolutely qualified, whom I like very much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, Yael comes to mind. Yael also has a baby on the way and, like, has a life. Like, gets to make that decision for herself, and running a team is also incredibly stressful. But yeah, I'm just like, but it's things like that where I'm like, if you were doing that work, if you were moving from that lens, right, you call it anti-racism, you can call it decolonizing, whatever. Those are suggestions that you wouldn't necessarily make, or you would at least pause before you make them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's just not happening. And again, not to take the focus off of people who come forward, but that stuff plays out in a million ways. And this is my last point. We got to stop. I think the way supremacy really irks me in this league is the idea that somehow racist acts are less violent. Like supremacy allows y'all to view racism as a character flaw.
Woo, come on now.
And not actual violence, in the same way that abuse is violent. So again, I will go back to Kaya's story. There were racial incidents.
Yes.
Or incidents of racism. And again, she was far kinder than I was in how she sort of parsed her words about those. When I was just straight up in the car, like I said, I listened to the episode while I was driving. I was like, that's racist.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's racist. So her abuse was still racialized.
Yes.
And the labor she was asked to do in the summer of 2020 is incredibly racialized. because again, all of the labor fell on the Black player.
Yep.
And this is what I mean. And so I'm absolutely for affinity groups. And I think like ally work should be done and everything, and people can be welcome to that space. But at the end of the day, all of those spaces should be dictated by those groups that they serve.
Yes, yes. So that's why it's, and then for that reason, like I told you in our prior discussion before we recorded this, it's going to be important that this little committee gets real diverse over the course of this week, because you'll have people make moves that are hella super white, where it's like, y'all gonna lean into Rise and try to do an infinity group, and then y'all gonna be like, well, have everybody join, and then we gotta be comforting to everybody in the space, when it's like, yo, if this is the Black group, if the goal is to help build community and do advocacy, they're going to steer what this looks like, not the white people. And so you got to have that separation, but you don't understand that unless you have the diversity at the table to help drive you with that.
Yeah. And so I don't know the answer to that. I mean, maybe we can touch on briefly like what we'd like to see from this. I think hope is worth clinging to right now, even though I think just as Black folk in America, our pessimism is deserved. We are not an optimistic people, but we are a hopeful people.
I'm optimistic, but go ahead.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I am more of a pessimist, but I am hopeful because hope is what we have. And I like to think hope is what got my ancestors through. So, I guess for me, some of the things I would like to see, and I've seen some of them put in place, right? The ability to report anonymously now exists.
Yes.
I believe it's, oh gosh, I should have had the name of the network that they're working with. It's an outside entity.
Safe House,
something like that.
Yeah.
Safe House seems not it. But, and again, this is in all the, follow-up articles, tweets. You can go on Meg Linehan's Twitter if you want to look at that, as well as any other WOSO journalist. But yeah, so you have that mechanism, which was not in place before. I believe all prior investigations, even if they were closed, are being reopened. I pray to God that means the Sarah Gordon incident.
Yes, that's that part.
The incident that we were told was not racist, and every single person of color was like, you sure?
Oh, and then fuck that. Go back. So in the cases of Jessica McDonald.
Oh, yeah.
Did Cindy LaRue have an incident?
Quite possibly. I know, I believe her son, Cassius, something was said to him as well. He was profiled.
Yeah, so any of these incidents, that means all the fucking incidents, all the racist incidents. Because to add to what you were talking about, racism causes trauma. It's like, even including the microaggressions, it's like getting stabbed all the time. It causes mad traumatic responses. I had that. I went to school for one thing, ended up doing a totally different thing because of the racism and sexism I endured. And at the time I didn't understand, hey, Chris, how did you not doing what you loved, and what are you doing? And it took me multiple years to step back and realize that, oh shit, it was the racism. It was the sexism that made me hate what I was doing.
Right.
And so, because of the microaggression, I had reached a breaking point where I was like, I can't do this no more, because I can't see myself living in Boston or living outside of Chicago and then like having to be questioned every day and show my value as a human because people don't see value in me as a Black LGBT woman.
I'm not gonna be degraded and freezing.
I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I'm like, I'm arguing with people in interviews, and I'm like, you're asking me crazy ass questions because you don't think I'm intelligent. And it's like, we can't be coworkers like that. Like, it's a whole bunch of stuff that I was like, I can't do this no more. I can't do this tap dancing for to be the good Negro on the day to day. I can't do it. So
absolutely,
this is what we talk about when the racism is traumatic. You may not think so. I was pissed off. Part of why I was pissed off early, as I said earlier, is because the racism is getting traded to the side dish of the abusive entree. It is like, it's unacceptable, and like white people not getting this particularly is just insane. And then like the and it's like frustrating because you see it have play out all across the, you know, you've been seeing it play out all weekend, and then the war is on Twitter when people are calling out the fuck shit, and then what's happening back and forth. Like, yeah.
Oh, and the centering of ourselves.
Yes, the centering of
the centering of ourselves in stories that don't concern you at all are screaming victim.
Yes.
When your pattern is attacking Black fans in this space.
Yes. Black fans, white media in the space. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Again, as if racism isn't violent. I need you to understand, my white listeners. It is violence, and it is violence every day, and it is violence multiple times in a day, and it wears, and it wears, and it wears, and it wears. It's on our DNA, particularly if we descend from slaves or the enslaved. We're not slaves. We didn't steal ourselves. But it's on our DNA, right? Like they found that the trauma of the Holocaust lives on the DNA of Jewish descendants or any descendant, because Jews were not the only people killed during the Holocaust. Yep. And if that's the case, I don't know why you think descendants of those who were enslaved wouldn't have the same trauma. So we're carrying our trauma with us. Mm-hmm. It's passed down. And it is the day, the trauma of racism, right? And again, that racism aimed at Black women looks different. That racism aimed at Black queer women looks different. That racism aimed at Black queer and disabled women is different. That racism leveled at our non-binary, non-cisgendered mm-hmm. Black siblings is different. And then there's levels within that, right? I'm also lighter, right? So I don't catch some of the abuse that my darker skin siblings yep. catch. So, right, and that's just one point, the classism, right? If you are poor and Black, you catch a different hell. And so I'm saying that to say like the nuance, supremacy also gives no nuance to Blackness.
Yeah.
Like no nuance to Blackness whatsoever. And I know this feels like probably for some as they listen to this is we've gone off the rails and that we're not talking about anything that's happened this weekend. But the truth of the matter is we're talking about everything that's happened this weekend.
Yep, it's all a part of it. It's all a part of it.
And we also were just like, we're going to give you the viewpoint from Black perspective because there hasn't been a single episode of anything, not an article, not a tweet, not a video, not a news appearance, not a nothing that's had a Black voice attached to it.
Yep.
And again, this article absolutely matters, but so does Kaya's story.
Yes.
Come on now. All the names of the unnamed Black players who got real similar stories.
Yep.
Some of them you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are on the national team, and there ain't that many damn Black people on the national team, so you figure that out.
Come on now.
Or why there aren't more Black people on the national team. And why there aren't more Black players in the NWSL.
Come on.
And what does retaliation look like against Black people and Black yes, bodies?
Right.
Versus white players and white right. bodies.
Right.
Think about this. For real, look at the logo for the league. That's a white player.
Yes.
That's a white silhouette. It's also a hyper-feminine silhouette, and not everybody in the league is I'm trying to think of a really good way to say this. Feminine, right? Like, or the way that it's perceived, but again, that's white feminine. That's white femininity.
Yes.
When you say femininity. I think we're recording this, and I mean, we had some organization, but it's just more getting our thoughts out because you're not listening.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not asking. You're not asking Crystal Dunn.
Whoop.
You're not. You think Crystal Dunn experienced abuse. She played for Washington. She played for Paul Riley.
What?
Like, I don't. And she's prominent, right? So when people say, oh, national team players have power, I'm like,
do they? Do they though?
Do they all? Like, I made sure I looked up who was on the women's national team PA. You think Jessica McDonald, who does have a vote, has power? I'm very serious right now. You think a Black woman from a low-income background who's a single Black mother, who in the LFG documentary has to basically drop her son off, live somewhere else for free, work two other jobs, even though she won a World Cup and was allocated. She wouldn't be able to vote if she wasn't allocated or had been allocated at some point. You think that woman has power? And you also think someone like that, who's the embodiment of the NWSL, who's played for like five different clubs, who's had to scratch and claw her way into professional soccer. You think she's throwing those players under the bus, particularly when I have yet to hear a non-national team NWSL player say, fuck the national team CPA or FA. Because even in the formation of it, there wasn't any beef. They eventually hope to be one, which is what likely will happen at the end of this year. But by all accounts, they're supportive. All those players play together.
Right.
They all know each other. They've all played together because it's insular, because it's a rich sport, because it's white. All those players know each other.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the chance to turn their backs on each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's too small a world. That's like me turning my back on all the Black people on my campus. We are 2.7% of the population. I don't have the opportunity.
Yeah, you see, we all together. We
don't have enough critical mass.
Not at all.
In women's soccer in this country, particularly the Black players, be turning their back on anybody, but in general.
They all got each other back.
Right, and so, yes, I think they should be lending their voices. Yes, I think there are things that people could have done differently. Yes, I think in hindsight, you would make different choices. But everybody's under the thumb of a much larger system and a much larger culture. And it's a nasty culture. And I try to return no human being evil for evil. But are we sure? It's not intentional.
What?
Just the way that this culture is set up. It seems real intentional. I don't think it's incompetence. I think it's evil.
What, to how it's set up? To
just the coercion, the secrecy.
Oh, yeah. It's all intentional. That's how you sustain your power.
Right. Because it ain't meritocracy.
Yeah, it's fucked up. There's no good intent on this at all.
Yeah.
And it's part, you've seen players talk about it, where it's like, you got to be quiet because you got to accept the bad pay. You got to accept the shitty medical care. You got to accept the shitty facilities.
Yeah, because there's no autonomy. They own nothing of themselves.
Right.
And so there's fear, right? If I say something, the league crumbles.
Yes.
I can't play the sport I love. I betray my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
All in an effort to what? Protect myself? But that's how abuse works, right? It thrives in silence. And it and that works because people use coercion and intimidation and fear.
So that's why it's all clicking now that you need to be loud as hell about this shit.
Yeah.
So I want to see is that the people that, I don't care how you do it, but you get the stories of various people. If you need Black players to be in a room together to do it, if you need Asian players, Latin players, so on and so forth, to be in separate rooms and groups to do it, to be collecting stories, to get a full scale of what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And that you leverage these stories to help build brand new whatever.
Who's telling these stories? Like, do we want to talk about that real quick?
Well, no. But I'm saying I'm saying for my vision for future, because we're talking about solutions.
True.
In our quest to be optimistic. Well, I'm optimistic all the time.
You are.
Yeah. For what I want to see for future steps forward is you actively collecting the stories and getting the voices of all the people. Additionally, I want there to be legitimate short-term long strategy across multiple things, from the advertising to the marketing. And speaking of which, this is a big thing I want to get into. The fuckery that is big media, like ESPN, and I went off on this on Twitter, and I guess it went a little bit viral because people had little comments to say. But for people who wanted to go, well, ESPN, they show WNBA games. Child, please, shut the fuck up. They start showing WNBA games because there was a pandemic. Mm. It's similar to how even NWSL started seeing more games on main big TV because of a pandemic. So if there was no pandemic, we'd be saying bullshit. So ESPN don't get no cookie and no kudos for, they got 50% increases of viewership this year. They have existed since 1979. The WNBA existed since 1996. The NWSL has existed since 2013. You can't tell me that in the normal of 2015 something years that you hadn't had time to show anything about any of these leagues, because this is a bigger overarching story, along with the fuckery that is U.S. soccer and white supremacy and white people behaving badly. It is the lack of actual investment in humanity and women and giving a damn about women's sports. And so you're not paying attention. So then I'm tired of hearing people talk about some, I almost said his name. I'm tired of hearing people go, well, why did they go report it to the media? Who, how are you going in your,
what
your
media?
Like who? Who's gonna listen? Mm-hmm. And two, when do you feel safe in a place of retribution? I'll say this. I asked some questions and people were highly scared to give me answers to things because of fear of retribution. Where are people going? This is me to Sky. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
What do you how do you think people are gonna even go talk to people in fucking a media outlet when if anybody finds out you just even talked, you could be banned from playing. Like, when are they going to feel safe to talk to you? Now, if you're big media and you dedicate reporters, as you, particularly ESPN has no excuse in this shit. They got ESPN FC. They got every fucking, they got men's soccer in places I didn't even know had men's soccer on there. You know, you can afford to put some reporters for the NWSL in the United fucking States. If you had reporters watching this stuff, they would see things. Because as a fan, me and you as fans have seen stuff happen over the years where it's like, is anybody going to report this shit? The shit that the U.S. Women's National Team has been through. And before people try to go, well, you making up shit. Like, no, go read Megan Rapinoe's book. Go listen to the interviews of Sydney LaRue, Ashlyn Harris, Allie Krieger. I can go on and on and on detailing the things during a certain person's tenure in charge of the national team. You could see stuff play out and you'd be like, that's a little retaliatory. That's some toxic workplace shit. But if I'm seeing it as a fan, if you're a reporter dedicated to be watching the national team, dedicated to be watching the NWSL, you would start picking up stuff and going, well, wait a minute now. And so then you can start help getting light to shine on this kind of shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Big media is part of the failure of this shit because they only report on these leagues when shit goes off the rails.
Yeah, it's been everywhere.
They're not entrenched in everything. And this is part of when you're talking about who's going to tell the story of what is actual the NWSL, because y'all don't know the history, because y'all don't know the iterations. So like when people are saying we got to burn it down, you can't completely burn this shit down and just blow it up, because where are the players going to go?
Aren't asking for that.
Yeah, and part of why you got a huge age gap on the national team is because the league fell apart twice. In the span in the early 2000s, my bad, mid-2000s.
Yeah.
Where people were forced to retire. Keep in mind, Kristen Press almost had to retire, y'all. Can you imagine?
Well, that whole generation of players almost retired.
Almost had to retire. So what league can afford to put all these people in the league? Like y'all being, and it will fuck up the entirety of women's soccer, by the way. Yes. So that's not gonna happen. So you have to build within the structure.
Think I saw like Megan Klingenberg allude to that, right? Like she's like, our desire is not to have the league fold, right? And thinking of, again, players leading, right? We need to listen to players. That's not what they want, because that is their livelihood. They want a better work environment. They don't want no work environment. They want to play soccer. They love playing the sport.
Yeah.
It's for many of them, it's all they know.
Yeah. Ain't shit.
Yeah, right. I think it's about overhauling, right? In this case, reform is probably more apropos than abolition, right? That's not always the case. And as much as I want to be an abolitionist and burn it all down sometimes, burning it all down often means engulfing in flames the very people you are trying to help.
Yep.
So I think we have to be very cognizant of that and be somewhat careful of putting all of our own politics onto the players. And that's not what they've said.
Yes.
And so what I do hope is, and we should also point out, is that as the CBA negotiations are going on, Lisa Baird was the only person in the room. None of the owners have been participating in the CBA negotiations, which is very unusual. How CBAs tend to work.
For the first iteration, though?
It doesn't matter. The owners still run the league. There should be representatives there.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So you need a rep.
From teams, right? At least, like, the commissioner should not be the person in the room doing all of the negotiation. I don't care if the commissioner is the mouthpiece for the owners. The owners, who are the richest people in this situation and the most powerful people in this situation, should be able to sit in a room and look their labor in the eye.
Right.
And they're not doing that. And so...
My chair just vibrated. Sorry. Yes, continue.
Oh, sorry. And so I think that's a big part of the disconnect, right? And again, that just shows sort of where we are. And the truth is the U.S. national team CBA expires on the 31st. So somebody got to figure something out.
Right.
Because you've got to be able to protect players, and the CBA would go a very long way in that. And if they can't do it now, I don't know when they'll be able to do it, but something's got to give. And keep in mind, as the last thing I'll say, I think, follow the money. So as investment in this league grows, revenue in this league grows, the desire to control the players and the product is going to increase. And now more than ever, the players need us, because fighting back against that is going to be incredibly hard.
Yeah. So this is not the time. I saw some foolishness of protest and being silent. What the fuck? Like, no, this is a time for all y'all fans, for all the supporters, for all media like individuals, for anybody to help support these players. Be loud as fuck. Be loud as hell.
Yeah.
Because this is the time to get the shit right and fix this shit. There's no, oh, we forgot. Okay, y'all got something. Okay, cool. We go silent. No, 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 no. It's like you put the people's feet to the fire. I expect by within the next week, we better have some diversity on this fucking committee. Like being that kind of aggressive and calling out the shit show. Yeah, continue on.
Yeah, and I think, again, you can't say you don't have the ability to do it because you were able to oust a commissioner and a coach in 24 hours. So you can make different decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, any of those decisions should absolutely involve a collective of players, diverse collective of players, helping to make those decisions. Yes. I think they should approve every appointment.
Yep.
That point, is what I think. Point,
period.
But that's, I mean, we have much more to say. I think we'll probably be making the rounds this week.
Yeah, we're going to be on multiple shows.
To continue to give you all the perspective, the Black soccer fans' perspective, right? Because, again, that's sorely lacking. And even on Twitter, right, there is, I can't remember who tweeted that, but there is a divide.
Yes.
There's a big difference between white soccer Twitter and Black soccer Twitter. And that was across the board. I don't think that was gendered, but I mean, in WOSO in particular, that's always very evident. That's a bit of the madness, and that's our unique take. I don't know any other way to see the world. I'm Black every day, B. So,
hey.
So that's the take we can give you.
And I almost said something else, but I'm like,
okay, go ahead.
I'm like, yo, keep it together. Keep it together, Sky. Okay. Go ahead.
But yeah. Yeah. So I hope something we've said or shared resonates and makes you think a bit differently and makes you ask different questions of the league and everybody involved in women's soccer in this country. And again, the ultimate goal is to not only protect players, but support them and have them thrive.
Yes.
And we mean all players.
All
players.
All the players.
All genders, all races, all sexualities, all abilities, all citizenship statuses, all of it. Protect players.
Yes.
Support players.
Yes.
Yeah. Invest in players. Okay.
Because you're not going to get all equality until everybody free.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the way this works. The least among us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all we've got. Do we want to jump into the happier parts of this, or do we want to take a break?
Oh, we're going to jump into the happy parts.
We'll jump into the happy parts. Okay. So we didn't want to end on a downer. It's been a hell of a week, particularly the end of the week. It's been, like we said, incredibly hard and heartbreaking for everybody who loves this sport. And so we wanted to bring a little joy into your life. And so hopefully Hits and Riffs will help do that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going first this week?
I don't know, I have to go.
Okay.
So, yesterday, keeping in the theme for Latin Hispanic Heritage Month, and then being fitting because of the topic this week. Mm. I like Oye Mi Canto, the Spanish version by Gloria Estefan. Mm. One of my favorite songs. One of my favorite songs.
Okay.
I hope that, did I say that last week? I don't think I did.
No, you didn't do Gloria Estefan.
Okay. I also would do Close My Eyes by her too.
That's a good one.
That's my one of my favorite songs by her. And then also back in the day, the throwback, Un Año de Amor, Year of Love by Luz Casal. How I heard that song initially was on the L Word. But I love all her music, actually. And I do karaoke that. I'm not karaokeing it today. Y'all been blessed.
I did some karaoke yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
It's a good stress reliever.
What is it?
It was whatever those sing games are on PS4 or Xbox. I did those. So that was fun. It's like competitive too. I'm not gonna
You know, that's one of my favorite things. I'm a karaoke superstar.
Oh, we got
the longest time of karaoke is 3 hours.
Oh, we gotta do a SBFC karaoke at some point.
Yes, we have to.
When we meet up again. Oh Lord.
I was singing the hits for 3 hours.
Oh, you were doing three. Yeah, I did about 3 hours.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's why I'm a little scratchy today, but that's okay. But yeah, awesome. Awesome. Good to know. I said SBSC karaoke coming to y'all in the future for sure. Okay, my yesterday turn up is, listen, I know I got my issues with this man and the man who produced this, actually, Kanye. But I love this song, Lucifer, by JC. And then just because I think it's apropos for rage and just perspective. My quiet storm isn't really a quiet storm. I would call it more protest music.
Yeah, protest music.
But it's Mississippi Goddamn by Nina Simone.
Okay.
I found myself humming that the other day as I just kept reading bit after bit after bit of news about this league. And as a Black woman, that's one of my go-tos. It's this particular type of anger that Nina is able to express for all of us. And again, I didn't have nearly the same plights that Nina had, being a very dark-skinned Black woman with a low voice from Mississippi. But I connect to her anyway, and she sings our pain very, very well. And so I think in my rage, this song comes to the forefront of my mind. So if you've never listened to it, you should listen to it. Nina Simone is legitimate, so. But don't watch that trash movie. Watch the documentary. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, why you bring that up? Anyway, so my today, so Snow the Product. That's one of my favorite MCs.
I know who that is.
Oh, look at you. Yes. One of my favorite MCs. She's so cool. Watching her evolution has been cool. I think I said this before, but Lord Be With You. One of my favorite songs. I was gonna do another one. I can't remember the name, but it's all in Espanol.
Okay.
He got a kind of revolutionary song. I gotta think of what that is. My other one is Freedom by Everybody Named Mama, the R&B version off the Panther, the movie soundtrack. So that's the movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that I love that song. You want to talk about protest song? You want to talk about a soundtrack to come
out? Is that with the women or the men?
It's the women.
The women one.
It's nothing. So it's the R&B one, and then there's a rap one.
Yeah. Okay.
That has, so the R&B one has every 90s
like R&B
singer in vogue.
Yeah, they're all in it. I remember that video.
Aaliyah, my homegirl, you know.
Oh God.
TLC. All
they
of
like
them.
Brownstones in it, yeah.
Brownstone, everybody, yeah. Every NTT is in there, and then the hip hop version has Queen Latifah, Yo Yo, Spinderella,
MC Light,
Left Eye, MC Light,
yeah,
and then Michelle,
Indicello, yeah,
she likes in the she hitting you with the bass and the
vocals.
She was doing that thing. Dallas Austin produced it, but one of my favorite tracks. Actually, that whole soundtrack's fire.
Yeah,
it's funny how entities try to prevent that movie from getting out because it went hard. Time to talk about the Black Panther Party.
Yeah,
but if you can see it and peep the soundtrack, you should check it out. I might link that on Twitter.
I think people need that education now more than ever. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the Black Panthers.
Right.
I also think there's some very legitimate criticisms, particularly around sexism and sexual assault of the Black Panthers.
Right. Yes.
And Black women's bodies. But but yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of things you can take from the Black Panther Party for sure. for the good and really good leaders. My today turn up is going to be $$SLIME. Ooh, alliteration. By Lil Nas X featuring Meg The Stallion, off of Montero, which is his best-selling album. And I think he's just passed like a billion listens or something like that very quickly on Spotify. So yeah, I think in terms of how you do like social media and marketing and music or art and just blend it all together, he seems to have a pretty good like pulse on how to do this. I don't know if I've seen anybody do it better than this young man. And I just think, you know, I think the world of Meg. So, but I like it. I like the beat. And then my Quiet Storm isn't quite current, but I just wanted to be in my happy place. And so I thought about Thinking About You by Frank Ocean. As he puts out albums, what, every once a decade now, it feels like. But yeah, Channel Orange makes me happy. So I wanted to end on a higher note. So it's a nice little love song about unrequited love and first love. So
I'll cast you out here.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what I've got. Do we have raves?
Just shout out to all my Black people. Shout out to all the people. Shout out to the Black soccer players, yes. Black staff, Black coaching entities, Black everybody in soccer.
Yeah.
It's been a wild ass week. Shout out to all y'all who've been vocal and been holding it down.
Yeah.
And been looking out and been looking up.
Yeah, I mean, same. I think obviously, again, we hope for protection, safety, and prosperity for all players. But again, the point of this podcast, and specifically Black players who are not, you know, large in number in the league, though this is the most we've ever had, I always worry about them. Just because, again, whatever white America, what is the saying? When white America has the cold, Black America has the flu. So, or even the sniffles, we have the flu. So I just always think about that and the fact that their voices aren't being heard, their faces aren't being seen, and their stories aren't valued. So just peace and healing, and mental health and wellness to them all. To the Black players, and we're all here if you really just need to reach out. I'm not perfect. I'm not a grade A journalist or a writer or anything at this point in my life, but if you need to tell your story, I'm here. My DMs are open.
Oh, it's you. About time you said you was opening a DM.
Yeah, I'll make it work. We'll figure it out. And also just shout out, I don't obviously want to state where I work. But our community suffered a loss last weekend, and it involved a young Black man. Another young Black man is in critical condition. The story was on all over as well. Again, we only are usually in the news when bad things happen. But I wanted to send, if anybody is listening from where I work, I wanted to send a special shout out to my Black students. Because they feel really unheard right now. But I hear you, I'm listening, and I will go to the mat and die on the hill on your behalf. You matter, your experiences matter, your trauma matters. And take care of yourselves first, and let the people who get paid full time try to do what they can, to help you. But it is all you can do some days to survive. And I'm so, so sorry that you had to find out about this part of being Black in America in the way that you did. And that adults in your world have not set up structures for you to be safe and protected and have a place to vent and get your emotions and get the help you need. That's not okay. And y'all are some of the strongest people I know. And I admire you every day. So yeah, I just wanted to shout them out. I don't like the word resiliency because I don't think you should have to be resilient, but they are anyway, and I just want them to know I see them and I hear them, and I'll do my best to do right by them. So if nobody else hears you, I hear you. And y'all are great. So I just didn't want to end on a bad note. And just shout out to every particularly Black athlete, like I said, who's just insisted on themselves and said no more. And
yep,
we hear you too, and we're proud of you. And to the shout out specifically to Naomi and Simone, who were just like enough, and I think set the way for a lot of other athletes to follow. So I hold them up in regard. So as always, Black women leading the way. So
yeah,
those are my shout outs. I guess we can just do our close here, which I totally forgot to add to the thing, because we were so focused on all the nonsense of the week this week. But we want to shout out quickly, obviously, our homies, our partners in crime, who all checked in on us and all just had our back. So shout out to For the Culture. Shout out to Sense, particularly for giving Kaya a platform when not many people did, and just having our backs and trying to amplify our voices. Shout out to Yogi, Can I Kick It? Shout out to Devin, who just is always ride or die and amplifies
mm-hmm.
like mm-hmm. no matter what. Devin quick to be like, Shea Butter FC podcast, so and who always has our back. We truly appreciate it. And obviously, like I said, Two Cents, Elle and the crew, and obviously Protagonist Soccer and the Alliance Podcast Network, all of whom give us a space to speak our minds each week, even when it's hard. Any shout outs for you real quick?
Our people. Oh, what's good, Doug?
Yeah, Doug's been great this week.
What's good, all the people? All y'all people.
Oh, and shout out to Diaspora United as well, as always, doing very similar work.
Sending TikToks and shit.
Yes, self-care.
Oh, it's a surprise. Welcome back, Andre.
Shout out to the homie Andre, who of all weeks was off of Wi-Fi this week. came back to this. I think he might still be playing catch up, but what a week to take off, my guy.
Welcome back.
Hopefully listen, we'll follow the players' lead. We don't know if there will be games next week. But we will probably touch on some WSL. The Champions League group ties begin this week as well, so we'll be able to talk about those, and hopefully some Black excellence that takes place in those games.
We can still pimp somebody's team. We can pimp Chicago.
Oh yeah, we can play GM, because in our opinion the league will be around, so we're not worried about that. And hopefully some other changes are made that are, you know, separate of this, like maybe the time of the championship game and some certain partnerships that the league has and all this other stuff.
Oh, like on Rise?
Yeah, and you know, I know it's not Rise, necessarily number one on the list. Oh my gosh. But hopefully some of those things can be looked into or changed or shifted as well. But yeah, that's what I got right now.
All right, then. So I guess it's about that time.
Yes, it is.
So I hope y'all have stayed hydrated
and stayed melanated.
And make sure the Black women in your life are celebrated.
And make sure your shea butter bombs are always elevated.
And so, yeah. We out. We will see y'all soon on whatever episode we pop on.
Next time, let's hope. We can't even hope for it not to be ridiculous anymore. Until next time, Sam.
Yeah, peace.
Peace out.